Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
It is now 7:34 here at WCCO. Welcome to Steele Talk, and I'm your host, Geraldine Steele, and I am so excited to talk tonight with Congresswoman Angie Craig on the CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus Hotline. Welcome to WCCO. May I call you Congresswoman Angie?
You can. You can call me Angie, Congresswoman, or whatever you want, Geraldine. Thank you for having me.
We're so excited. Of course, I want you to recap the governor's address, a very short address, and the job he is doing leading Minnesota. But I also want to talk to you about this emergency declaration that he has asked, the governor has asked of the president. Can you address both?
Yeah, absolutely. So with the rest of Minnesota, I just finished watching the governor's address to our state. And he's made for this moment. He is exactly who we need right now for those tough decisions, with his background in the National Guard, with his background as a teacher and a member of Congress. He understands what it means to lead and to ask people to sacrifice and do what's required to help our neighbors. So I couldn't be more proud of the governor and his State of the State address here a moment ago. With that, it's that same leadership that Governor Walz used today to ask the president to declare a major disaster declaration here for the state of Minnesota as it relates to the effect of this pandemic. And so, as you said previously, it's been great that the delegation on a bipartisan basis has been able to come together time and time again over the last several weeks. And we did that together this afternoon to all come out in support of that expedited major disaster declaration that the governor's asked for.
How much are we looking at? I understand that the CARES Act, if I'm not mistaken, is about $2.2 billion that Minnesota could get. Is that correct?
Well, the state of Minnesota will get a bit, but we also have lots in the CARES Act that will come down directly to Minnesota businesses. The Small Business Administration is in the process of rolling some of that out. Obviously, some county units got included in the CARES Act. Some didn't. That's one of the issues that I've taken. But the governor's request is going to allow the federal government to provide some additional assistance in disaster supplemental nutrition programs, medical assistance, crisis counseling, very specific things that will allow the federal government to support on more fully going forward. But the CARES Act was a great rescue recovery bill, but I don't want us to delude ourselves. This pandemic is going to take a lot of recovery once we get through the rescue. So I think, in my opinion, we need to look forward to what is going to be needed next. And unfortunately, I think that we're going to need a fourth bill that is put together by the Congress over the coming weeks.
Yeah, and when do we know that we have enough?
Well, Geraldine, I spent the best part of the last 2 weeks talking to business owners throughout this congressional district. And, we sent $377 billion, a small business rescue plan. So, I think part of it is we need to see how far that goes. But, I've talked to business owners who put, second mortgages on their homes, lines of credit on their homes, just to keep paying their employees through this pandemic and through this crisis. And many of them are just now starting to seek assistance through the new program put out and signed into law a week ago. So it's going to take a little bit of time to sort that through. But I think the most important thing we can do right now is just continue to make sure our frontline healthcare workers are supported. There was a bit more of that in the CARES Act. But we've got a long way to go, I think, in terms of managing the crisis effectively at the federal level. As long as our healthcare workers are being sent into battle every day without the personal protective equipment that they need, then we've still got work to do. So that's something that is on my mind every single day, and I think we should be doing much more Our cities and towns out here in the 2nd District are, you know, they're being asked to come up with more and more services. Their firefighters, their EMTs, they need PPE, that personal protective equipment as well.
Yes.
And at the same time, they're being asked to do more. Their revenue is going down because their revenue is primarily through either business taxes or services or property taxes. And so our mayors are concerned. I think we need to take a good look at that. And then, you know, as we look at the rural parts of this district, this pandemic has really uncovered the haves and have-nots when it comes to high-speed internet and broadband. So I think in the next bill, we need to make sure that we're prioritizing rural areas by making sure we've got investment in broadband for telehealth, for distance learning. None of this is any good whatsoever, Geraldine, if you don't have access to the internet.
It's so true. I spoke to some educators last Sunday, and they dealt with that. I asked him for one of the biggest school districts in our state. I asked the question, so what about the students who don't have internet at home, and they're doing their best to make sure that that family has it? Is this something we should have been prepared for initially, or do you feel like we have been well prepared here in Minnesota?
Well, you know, we've done our best. I don't think anybody, saw this coming. But, you know, we're more prepared than most states. You know, we know if it's below 40 below, we stay home and we do distance learning now. So, you know, many of the school districts had the capacity to offer those hotspots to students who may not have home access to the internet. But, you know, this is that on steroids and more. And so, you know, obviously we're all adapting to the new way of learning and working. And, you know, were we prepared for the pandemic? You know, the answer to that clearly at this point is no, we were not prepared. We should have been doing more to prepare. But right now is not the time to do a full-fledged review of what we were or weren't prepared to do. Right now is the time to show leadership. I see that happening in the state. I'd like to see more of that coming from the federal government.
Exactly. So here's where my sanity lies. My sanity lies safely in the hands of our governor. I feel that he is strong. I believe his words. I know that he's sincere and he's smart. I will follow that leadership. You know, I've been working on a master's degree in leadership, and I tell you, Andy, what I've learned about leadership and the importance of it, we cannot succeed without great leadership is how I look at it. And so when I look at the federal government, there are so many messages coming from so many different people. I don't know who to listen to. In your 2nd district, how do you advise your constituents to listen? Who do you advise them to listen to?
Well, I constantly say we need to listen to the medical experts. We need to rely on them for the advice and counsel on a go forward basis on how to keep ourselves, our families, and our neighbors safe. And but we do need leadership from the federal government. And as I said before, Geraldine, I don't want to go back and say, you know, maybe in hindsight we shouldn't have disbanded the global health security team responsible for pandemics 2 years ago. Right now, what I want to focus on is the here and now. What could we be doing to lead in a more urgent way? Can we cut through some of the chaos the states are seeing by naming a single federal supply chain czar who is responsible for acquiring the personal protective equipment and making sure it's going where it's most needed? You know, should we centralize FEMA's procurement process for these supplies? Of course we should. You know, third, should we make sure that we're utilizing Defense Production Act effectively? Should we have a central command for logistics support? That is the leadership we need right now in this nation from this federal government and this administration. And sadly, instead, we have states competing out there on eBay for ventilators, and we have states competing with Amazon for personal protective equipment. What we need right now is leadership more than anything. And I see that here in Minnesota. There'll be plenty of time to look at what should have been done. But what I'm talking about is what we should be doing right this minute at the federal level.
Mm-hmm. I thought we had clear understanding on what needed to be done. I thought it was all lined up. Until now, I'm finding out things have fallen apart. There have been things that have been taken away
that I didn't know were taken away. And I consider myself an educated voter. You know, I consider myself really engaged in the process, understanding what our leaders are doing. And I missed that completely. Is it that most of us missed it? Was it something that happened quietly that went away we weren't told about? Or is it that we haven't been paying attention, or I haven't been paying attention?
Well, I'll be truthful with you. I mean, I'm seeing letters from members of Congress flying around now warning the administration that it was a really bad idea to shut down the global health security team. You know, it's not that no one was paying attention. It was simply, you know, this wasn't the highest priority for a lot of folks, and now it's the only thing. And there's no doubt, Geraldine, we're going to get through this. We are. I mean, I've been proud of the way that we've come together on a bipartisan basis as a delegation the last few weeks. I've been proud that Minnesotans have helped each other by staying at home as much as possible. The number of companies who've stepped up to go above, I've been proud that Minnesotans have helped each other by staying at home as much as possible. The number of companies who've stepped up to go above and beyond what they were asked to do, and individuals who've done the same, the food banks in my congressional district who picked up the slack here in the last several days. I was delivering Meals on Wheels on Friday, and you've got a whole new crew of volunteers who've stepped up since the elderly and more vulnerable population have not been able to do that. It's in the midst of what is going to be no doubt painful for us as Americans. I've got two friends here in the last 2 days, I've learned, who are in ICU with COVID-19. And so, you know, this is going to affect every single one of us. My dad got laid off last week, and one of my sons, I'm proud to say, is in a manufacturing production plant right now making components that will go in ventilators. This thing is going to affect every one of us. It's affecting the businesses and the people that I love in this congressional district. My mayors are working as hard as they possibly can. My governor's working hard. And I know we're going to come through this, but I know we're going to have to keep working together and put politics aside. This thing doesn't know a Democrat from a Republican from an independent, this virus. It's time. It's time, Minnesota. It's time, America. It is time that we work together to make sure that we are truly, as my great governor says, one Minnesota.
Amen. Amen to that. And finally, on this Palm Sunday, you recently had a conversation with religious leaders around the area from early. That was earlier this week, I believe, correct?
Yeah, that was. It was amazing. It was an interfaith gathering of local leaders.
Yeah, my sister Janet Steele, who is a pastor of a UCC church, was a part of that discussion, and she was so impressed with you and spoke very highly of the words and how you looked and handled that conversation. What are you hearing from religious leaders right now of how this COVID-19 is really affecting them directly?
Well, Geraldine, if you're not moved when standing next to Reverend Janet Steele, you can't be moved. That's my first statement back to you. So you're
amen.
Your sister is a force to be reckoned with. I had the honor and privilege of sharing a pulpit with her at a UCC church recently. And, you know, everyone's trying to learn to do their job differently. How do you pastor grief when you can't be present and hold someone's hand? How do you, give last rites, to a parishioner? How do you create community when you can't be together? And it's just amazing how these interfaith folks are figuring out how to do it, whether it's, Easter Sunday, whether it's Ramadan, it doesn't matter. Everybody's trying to figure out how to do this as a community, and it is beautiful. I was teasing my own pastor that I probably attended church more since it went to Zoom than I did before, but she knows I'm there, and our leaders need our prayers right now as well, too. Geraldine, we do. And, help us know the right decisions. The decisions our policymakers are making are affecting lives all across Minnesota. And we're just working hard to make sure that, we keep our constituents' health at the forefront and well-being, and at the end of the day, just trying to be here for each other.
It's so true. And we also have to pray for those outside of our country. This is a pandemic. You're talking a global infestation is what I look at it, or an infection. It's just amazing to watch it spread so quickly. And I've been praying for others, you know, for other countries and other leaders, trying to make sure that we all get on the same page. And I'm discouraged by that. It feels as though we can't, but I'm hopeful. That's for sure.
Well, we have to come together. This pandemic knows no borders, and we don't have a choice. And if we ignore that aspect of it, then we're not going to be, you know, in my humble opinion, you know, taking the community that we're supposed to care about, at least by my own faith, to heart. So, you know, the community is humankind. It's everyone. It has no borders. And, you know, I know in Minnesota we're going to take care of each other in real time, and we need to do the same across this country, and we need to do the same across the entire planet.
You know, I meant to also ask you about the bill that you further covered children under, the Dependent Children Count Act, if I'm not mistaken, that's what it's called. Can you tell us a little bit about it before we let you go?
Yeah, Geraldine, it sounds so simple, and frankly, I think it was an oversight from the Senate bill. You know, the House, us House members, we were asked to vote on the Senate bill. It was, you know, not perfect, but one of the huge imperfections was that folks are only going to get rebated, that $500 rebate for dependent children, if those children are 16 and under. So as soon as I realized the Senate bill should have been a broader group of dependents, I introduced my own bill, and it's now up to about 120 co-sponsors in a matter of 3 days.
Wow.
To make sure that dependents who are 17 to 18, dependents 19 to 24 who are college students, you know, I've had a number of people jokingly say my college students now home in my basement eating me out of house and home. I think constituents, they're going to be surprised to learn that those dependents are not covered, in addition to disabled adult children who may live in your home and you claim them as dependents. I do think this was an oversight in the Senate bill, and I do think as a Congress we need to come together and correct that and make sure that those dependents are covered under the CARES Act.
And bipartisan support as well?
Bipartisan support. It was introduced. My Republican colleagues were just as surprised as I was to find out that those dependents aren't covered. And one of the first phone calls to alert me of this was my 21-year-old college student son. So college students are paying a lot of attention to this.
Well, we can sure understand how it was missed, considering how fast this is moving and how we need to get it done as quickly as possible. And we really appreciate what you are doing for the 2nd District and for Minnesota overall. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Congresswoman Angie Craig. Thank you.
Thank you. It's a real honor. Take care.
All right. You too.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it, with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.